Hey, Brevard County, thank you for tuning into the Refresh Radio program. My name's Bob Arthurs. I pastor Emeritus Assembly of God. We're going to spend the next half hour here with you as we're talking about the Word of God, things that belong to Him. And boy, have I got a good one for us to talk about today. And it's going to be in the most unlikely book that you will imagine. We're going to end up in the book of Job this morning. The book of Job, a lot of people like to focus on Job in the book of Job, but today we are going to focus on God, and we're going to spend some time, we're going to start reading in chapter 38. I just want to set the stage for you. Our actual point is going to be in chapter 42, so this may be one of the most unusual radio broadcasts that you ever hear, and that we're going to spend a significant portion of time reading directly from the Word of God. So we're going to begin reading at Job chapter 38, and verse number 1. Now, let me tell you what's going on. God starts bragging on Job in chapter 1. Satan accuses God of favoritism, a charge that God never denies in chapter 1. And Satan says, you know what, if you start taking away the blessings that you have bestowed upon him, he's going to renounce you. And so there's a process that takes place, and Job maintains his righteousness, his integrity before God, and continues to press on, and then repeat the scenario again. God starts bragging on Job, and Satan says, yeah, but if you let me touch his skin, skin for skin, and you take away his health, and he is going to deny you. His own wife at some point in time says that, you know, you should just curse God and die. He is in a wretchedly miserable condition. He has lost everything. He's lost his family. He's lost his kids, his wealth, and now his health. And one of the things that I always like to poke fun of is he says, even my breath is offensive to my wife. I mean, you are having, when you have gotten to the point that the fact that you're very breathing is offensive to your wife, you know things are really, really bad. And yet, in spite of that, Job refuses to denounce God, but he is absolutely miserable, and he's got three comforters that come to him to comfort him in his affliction. And for a number of days, they sit there. They do not say a word. It was the wisest thing that they had ever done. We find it to be a very awkward situation when we are dealing with someone who is going through an unprecedented level of attack in their life. And a lot of times, we don't know how to handle the awkwardness. We don't know how to handle that because we've never been in that position before. So let me share with you just a little bit of wisdom, and that is, if your reason for coming is to comfort, then comfort. And after 7 days of sitting there, I believe it was, in sackcloth and ashes, Job begins to lift up his voice, and the comforters transition from being in a role of comfort to doing the devil's bidding, and that is the role of the accuser of the brethren. And so Job would speak, and one of them would make an accusation, and Job would respond, and then they would speak, and there's this back and forth, Job between comforter one and Job between comforter two, and finally at in the mid to late 30s, one of the comforters by the name of Elihu begins to speak up. Chapter 35, I believe it is. No, he even starts before that. Elihu starts to speak in chapter 32. And he goes on and on and on. He was the youngest of the three, but he thought he was the wisest. And he goes on and on and on and on and on. And in chapter 38, God puts an end to Elihu's speech, which was not about comfort anymore. And people thought they were defending God against Job's accusations. They were there to comfort. So if you are there in a position to comfort a family friend or a loved one from church, sometimes the best thing to do is just be there. Just be there. I tell you what doesn't work for me. Okay? You might think that pastors don't go through things. We do. And that we don't ever need someone there to encourage and to comfort us. We do. But here's what doesn't work. Spiritual platitudes. Those little Christian memes that you could see on Facebook that have the depth of, a communion cup spread out over an acre. I mean, things that are just so shallow. God works all things together for the good of those that love him, to those who are called according. It is spiritual truth, yes, but it is not there. It's not comforting to hear at that point in time. I remember hearing a counselor that dealt with fallen ministers and in their ministry, and they said, whenever we would find out that we would have a preacher who had fallen into sin coming for restorative counsel, mental health counseling spiritual counseling, the staff would immediately go into a season of fasting and prayer because they realized there's nothing that we're going to be able to say to this person that they don't already know and they haven't said 1,000 times already. Somewhere there became a disconnect, and so they would begin to seek the face of God because in order to help this person, they needed to know, God, what do you have to say that is going to turn this situation around in this person's life? So it is okay to be there and just comfort people. Even if you don't say anything, just the fact that you are there. And so Elihu is, going on and on and on. And that brings us to chapter 38. And so I'm going to read all the way to chapter 42 and verse number 6. Okay. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" Now, he's not talking about Elihu here. He is coming against Job here. And the thing that I like to point out is God knew issues in Job's heart that Job didn't know about, and God knew issues in Job's life that even Satan didn't know about. And God wanted to deal with those issues in Job's life because he loved him, because he is proud of him. And he ends up blessing him immensely. So who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? This chapter here is a word of caution that I give to anybody who goes onto a verbal rant of when they're accusing God. And I say, you got to be careful. Because the Bible talks about that the first person that present their case seems right until the other person presents the other side of the story, and then things take on a whole different perspective. And so if you're going to lay out accusations against God, you've got to be prepared for God's rebuttal, for God's cross-examination. And that's what goes on here. Now, prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. So the questioning begins. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors? when it burst forth and issued from the womb, when I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band, when I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors, when I said, this far you may come, but no further, and here your proud waves must stop. Love that verse. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It takes on form like clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. From the wicked their light is withheld and the upraised arm is broken. Have you entered the springs of the sea, or have you walked in search of the depths? Have the gates of death been revealed to you, or have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? Have you comprehended the breadth of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. Where is the way to the dwelling of light? And darkness, where is its place? That you may take it to its territory, that you may know the paths to its home. Do you know it because you were born then, or because the number of your days is great? Have you entered the treasury of the snow, or have you seen the treasury of hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? By what way is light diffused, or the east wind scattered over the earth? Who has divided a channel for the overflowing water, or a path for the thunderbolt, to cause it to rain on a land where there is no one, a wilderness in which there is no man, to satisfy the desolate waste and cause to spring forth the growth of tender grass? Has the rain a father, or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice and the frost of heaven? Who gives it birth? The waters harden like stone, and the surface of the deep is frozen. Can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades, or loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out Maseroth in its season, or can you guide the Great Bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that an abundance of water may cover? Now listen, I'm going to stop for just a second. God's asking questions and he's demanding an answer. Okay? Can you lift your voice to the clouds that an abundance of water may cover you? Can you send out lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Who has put wisdom in the mind, or who has given understanding to the heart? Who can number the clouds by wisdom? Or who can pour out the bottles of heaven when the dust hardens in clumps and the clods cling together? Can you hunt the prey for the lion, or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens, or lurk in their lairs to lie in wait? Who provides food for the raven when its young ones cry to God and wander about for lack of food? Okay? So in chapter 38, God does a whole lot of, where were you when I did this? And also, can you do the very things that I've done? Can you explain it? Where were you when I was doing this? Where were you when I was doing this? So far, Job is left without words. Chapter 39. Do you know the time when the wild mountain goats bear young, or can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill, or do you know the time when they bear young? They bow down, they bring forth their young, they deliver their offspring, their young ones are healthy. They grow strong with grain, they depart and do not return to them. Who set the wild donkey free? Who loosed the bonds of the onager? Whose home I have made the wilderness, and the barren land his dwelling. He scorns the tumult of the city. He does not heed the shouts of the driver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searches after every green thing. Will the wild ox be willing to serve you? Will he bed by your manger? Can you bind the wild ox in the furrow with ropes, or will he plow the valleys behind you? Will you trust him because his strength is great? Or will you leave your labor to him? Will you trust him to bring home your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? The wings of the ostrich wave proudly. But are her wings and pinions like the kindly stork's? For she leaves her eggs on the ground and warms them in the dust and forgets that a foot may crush them or that a wild beast may break them. She treats her young harshly as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain without concern because God deprived her of wisdom and did not endow her with understanding. When she lifts herself on high, she scorns the horse and its rider. Have you given the horse strength? Have you clothed his neck with thunder? Can you frighten him like a locust? His majestic snorting strikes terror. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. He mocks at fear and is not frightened, nor does he turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and javelin. He devours the distance with fierceness and rage, nor does he come to a halt because the trumpet has sounded. At the blast of the trumpet, he says, "Aha!" He smells the battle from afar, the thunder of captains and shouting. Does the hawk fly by your wisdom and spread its wings towards the south? Does the eagle mount up at your command and make its nest on high? On the rock it dwells and resides, on the crag of the rock and the stronghold. From there it spies out the prey. Its eyes observe from afar. Its young ones suck up blood, and where the slain are, there it is. God is talking about his diversity in creation and how he is the one who did all of that. Chapter 40. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, "Shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it." Then Job answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice, but I will proceed no further." Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me." In other words, this cross-examination is not over. "Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? Have you an arm like God, or can you thunder with a voice like his? Then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor, and array yourself with glory and beauty. Disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Hide them in the dust together. Bind their faces in hidden darkness. Then I will also confess to you that your own right hand can save you." It cannot. I'm just inserting that there. You cannot save yourself. Only through Jesus can we be saved. "Look now at the behemoth, which I made along with you. He eats grass like an ox. See, now his strength is in his hips and his power in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze, his ribs like bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees in a covert of reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth, though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare." Chapter 41. "Can you draw out Leviathan with a hook, or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose, or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make many supplications to you? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant forever? Will you play with him as with a bird? Or will you leash him for your maidens? Will your companions make a banquet of him? Will they apportion him among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him. Remember the battle. Never do it again." I like that. "Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. Who then is able to stand against me? Who has preceded me that I should pay him? Everything under heaven is mine. I will not conceal his limbs, his mighty power, or his graceful proportions. Who can remove his outer coat? Who can approach him with a double bridle? Who can open the doors of his face? With his terrible teeth all around, his rows of scales are his pride, shut up tightly as with a seal. One is so near another that no air can come between them. They are joined one to another, they stick together and cannot be parted. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning light, sparks of fire shoot out, smoke goes out of his nostrils. As from a boiling pot and burning rushes, his breath kindles coals, and a flame goes out of his mouth. Strength dwells in his neck, and sorrow dances before him. The folds of his flesh are joined together. They are firm on him and cannot be moved. His heart is as hard as stone, even as hard as the lower millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. Because of his crashings, they are beside themselves. Though the sword reaches him, it cannot avail, nor does spear, dart, or javelin. He regards iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. The arrow cannot make him flee. Sling stones become like stubble to him. Darts are regarded as straw. He laughs at the threat of javelins. His undersides are like sharp potsherds. He spreads pointed marks in the mire. He makes the deep boil like a pot. He makes the sea like a pot of ointment. He leaves a shining wake behind him. One would think the deep had white hair, on earth there is nothing like him, which is made without fear. He beholds everything. He is king over all the children of pride. In other words, God says, the most powerful force that you see in all creation, said, I can tame that. You cannot. Chapter 42, verse number 1. Then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do everything, and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. You asked, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know. Listen, please, and let me speak. You said, I will question you, and you shall answer me. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. What I wanted you to see here in this passage, and it's why I read all of that other, is that Job comes to the realization at the very end of the book of Job that God, you can do everything, and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. In the NIV, it says, I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted. Verse 3, you asked, who is this that obscures my plans without knowledge? Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. I wanted to tell you today that God has purpose. You were created on purpose, with a divine purpose. Before the foundations of the world, just as all of that magnificent that is attributed to the Lord in the latter parts of the book of Job, all of that took place, God said, in 2020, I want this person living in Brevard County because I have a plan and a purpose. You are not a cosmic accident. Do you realize that some of the greatest contributors to humanity had physical limitations or social limitations, challenges to their birth, their upbringing, and yet God's purpose was greater than their poverty, greater than their physical limitations, greater than their blindness at times. You know, I remember as a kid hearing about the challenging life that Helen Keller had. She was blind and deaf and mute. And there was a lady who was quite a forceful teacher, but Helen Keller had a purpose. And in the end, she ended up being a blessing to the lady who trained her, because the lady who trained her ended up having some physical challenges as well. I want you to know that today it is not your purpose that I'm concerned about. It's what is God's purpose. Because God's purpose will come to pass in your life and in my life. David is, you know, the standard of kings for the nation of Israel leading up until the time that Jesus comes and assumes the throne. And it says of David that he would not die, he did not die until he had fulfilled all of God's purposes for him during his lifetime. I know that during this season in 2020, that it's been a great disruptor. There's been tremendous loss of life. There's been economic hardship. There's been social upheaval and things of that. All of this converging right now. And in the midst of everything that is going on, every attack of the enemy, and the reason that I say that is because it is the devil that comes to steal, to kill, and to destroy. God comes to have life. There was a verse that I read there, and it's in chapter 38, verse number 36. It says, "Who has put wisdom in the heart, or wisdom in the mind, and who has given understanding to the heart?" And so I realize that God is the source of that. So there are people that we are praying for right now that are having some struggles with the processes of thought. But God can renew their mind. He's the one who made it new. He's the one that can renew it again. And so we are praying that God's purposes for salvation, for healing, for wisdom, for blessing, for prosperity, for influence, for eternity, all of those things will come to pass. No purpose of God's is going to be thwarted. Now, I will close with this platitude, not because it's a platitude, but because it reaffirms this truth, and that is, if God is for you, who can be against you? His purpose in our lives is going to come to pass. God bless you. We'll see you next time right here on Refresh.
Thank you for tuning in today to Refresh with Pastor Bob Arthurs. Refresh is brought to you by the church family of Merritt Assembly of God in Merritt Island, Florida. If you do not have a church home, we invite you to visit with us this Sunday. We have Sunday school at 9:30 a.m. and worship at 10:30 a.m. We are located at 165 North Grove Street on Merritt Island. You can discover more about the church through our website, MerrittAssembly.com. Email us any prayer needs and testimonies to MerrittAssembly@hotmail.com. We invite you to tune in Monday through Friday on WMIE 91.5 at 8:30 a.m. and 5 o'clock p.m. and WWBC 1510 at 10:30 a.m. Remember, Proverbs 11:25, "He who refreshes others will himself be refreshed."
Change, but I don't.